federal prison sentence of former GOP Congressman George Santos, who pleaded guilty to wire fraud and identity theft charges. CBS's Willie James Inman reports.
Clearly, the president wanted to put that message out there that while Santos might not have been the best individual, but that he somehow deserves a second chance with this commutation that the president announced today.
After meeting with Ukraine's president at the White House today, President Trump tells reporters that he thinks the fighting between Russia and Ukraine needs to end.
Stop right now at the battle line. I told that to President Zelensky. I told it to President Putin.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Every 15 seconds, someone is diagnosed with cancer. If it's happened to you or someone you love, the American Cancer Society can help at every step of the journey. Visit cancer.org today.
540 WAUK, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation, and home to the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
World, national, local, and state news with sports, traffic, weather, and money news, all news, all morning on 540 WAUK on 100.3 FM.
It's the Brewers and Dodgers in L.A. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. It's the Brewers and Dodgers for Game 4 of the National League Championship Series tonight. We'll have a recap for you after the game. College football, the Badgers host number one ranked Ohio State tomorrow at 2:30. NFL, the Packers play the Cardinals in Arizona on Sunday. I asked Matt LaFleur, how demanding is it every week for quarterback Jordan Love to mentally prepare for a game?
Yeah, it's always, I mean, there's going to be homework. I think that's what the great ones do, and I think that's what our quarterback does. And every guy's a little bit different in how they're able to retain whatever it is that you're telling them. And I think Jordan's got unbelievable recall, and the longer we've been together, the easier he gets it. So now we got a great test this week. I think, like we mentioned, this defense, they do a lot of things that are going to test you in regards to showing you one thing, playing another, and having complimentary looks.
That's Packers head coach Matt LaFleur with sports. On Mike Clemens.
Matt Nair on air.
Hi, it's Jane Matt Nair.
Hi, it's Greg Bach.
I'm Calvin.
Join us weekdays 9 to 11 across the Civic Media Radio Network for Matt Nair on air.
We cover all the news that directly affects us as Wisconsinites.
And we lighten things up in hour number two with a segment called Audio Sorbet, and this shouldn't be a thing. We hope you can join us.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Get your bingo card out. If you had John Bolton being indicted this week on your bingo card, congratulations, you win. 18-count indictment for mishandling classified information. Trump's former national security advisor, one of the very best people. Remember, only the very best. Trump made comments to reporters that he didn't know that he's a bad person. He's a bad guy. Too bad. That's the way it goes in Trumplandia. That's the way it goes. Cross me, will ya? Now, mishandling classified information. Interesting. My question is, did he not keep it in the bathroom? Did he not leave it on the table for foreign leaders to put their hands out? I'm just asking questions. Evidently, this is the next step. I thought it was going to be Schiff. I got to be honest. I'm going to lose this bingo card week. Also, this is an interesting story. The Chamber of Commerce has sued the Trump administration over Trump's shakedown of the H-1B visa program. And look, I'm not even entirely against the idea of charging corporations to go get workers from other countries to do jobs that there should be people here at home to do. Not even really opposed to it. For me, the interesting part's going to be, how's the Supreme Court going to deal with this? Because what we know is whenever the Chamber of Commerce does something at the Supreme Court level, they win like 75% of the time. Oh, what will the Roberts Court do? Also, we find out, according to CNBC, that the tariffs have cost global businesses somewhere around $1.2 trillion. The report says that about a third of that was picked up by corporations, because that's what happens. Sometimes companies absorb it so they don't have to raise prices because they don't want to lose market share. Where there's competition, where there's not, it just gets passed on to consumers, which is what happened here. About two-thirds of it passed on to consumers. And again, not entirely against the idea, as long as there's some benefit, you know, like saving, you know, industries for domestic production. As you know, I've said this before, I'm a huge supporter of domestic consumption for domestic production and vice versa. We make stuff, we consume stuff. We create jobs here, we were able to afford to buy stuff. Makes sense. This, nobody is sure really where the two-thirds of $1.2 trillion have gone, other than it's probably gone into government coffers, which has been redistributed where? To corporate America and to the very wealthy. At the expense of whom, may you ask? That's right, working people. This administration is not your friend. Stop it. Stop defending them. This weekend, the No Kings rally. Hope you're going to find a place. Hope you're going to get out there. Hope you're going to go to nokings.org and find a location near you to get out in the streets. But if you're in Austin, the Texas Governor Greg Abbott, he's deploying the state's National Guard. They sure love deploying troops against Americans, don't they? Because they're going to make sure that there's no shenanigans going on. And where are they going? They're going to Austin. Because Austin's like the liberal oasis of Texas, I'm told. So they're going to come down with the heavy fist of the National Guard. And are we surprised? The answer is no, and expect more of this to come. Also, a bunch of billionaires. And this, I kind of like this. There's a list of billionaires who have spent a lot of money to oppose Zohran Mamdani and his push to become the mayor of New York. Bill Ackman gave $1 million to the Defend New York City Super PAC. They oppose Mamdani. And Laura Tisch, $100,000 to fix the city, a super PAC supporting Cuomo. And Daniel Loeb, $150,000 plus another $100,000. So up to $250,000 to donate the Fix the City group supporting Cuomo. All because, well, they know that it's going to pay off. Understand, what they know really well is how to get a return on their investment. And that return on investment is you get the right people into office, you're going to get your stuff. And the thing that gets me is Mamdani is, I got to tell you, hitting the right note. He went on Fox News, and this is Zohran Mamdani on Fox News. And I got to tell you, I love this.
I want to take this moment because you spoke about President Trump, and he may be watching right now. And I just want to speak directly to the president, which is that I will not be a mayor like Mayor Adams, who will call you to figure out how to stay out of jail. I won't be a disgraced governor like Andrew Cuomo, who will call you to ask how to win this election. I can do those things on my own. I will, however, be a mayor who is ready to speak at any time to lower the cost of living. That's the way that I am going to lead this city. That's the partnership I want to build, not only with Washington, D.C., but anyone across this country. Mm-hmm. I think it's important because too often the focus on the needs of working class Americans, working class New Yorkers, are put to the side as we talk more and more about the very kinds of corrupt politicians like Andrew Cuomo that delivered us into this kind of crisis.
No, and the reality is the line there that's the important one. Understand, the line that to me is the most important part of that is too often the focus on the needs of working class Americans are put aside. That's, you want to know why rich people are digging into their pockets? That line right there. Somebody who's going to go, you know what? I care about working people. I care about their education. I care about their health care. I care about if they live in a food desert. I care about their children. I care about safe communities. I care about a whole bunch of stuff that, help families, especially working class families. And you start going down that rabbit hole of how can we make the working class a little more prosperous, a little more secure, a little safer, give them a little bit more opportunity. And I got to tell you, that really upsets our wealth class, which is why they're digging deep. They're digging deep. And look, Zohran Mamdani is a fun name to say, but the policies, in my view, are the important ones. Now, I got a whole bunch, he's a communist. No, he's a socialist. All back and forth. He's an istist. I can tell you he's not a fascist. He's a democratic socialist from what I've been told, which is a lot like Bernie Sanders. And I'm a huge Bernie Sanders fan. And I think if we had more of that, you know, more democratic socialists who go, you know what? Social Security was a great program. It's helped keep seniors out of poverty. Health insurance for children. CHIP, really a great policy. Make sure the kids get care when they need it. And go down the line of all of the Great Society New Deal programs that lifted the middle class into existence, that took poverty jobs and made them living wage jobs, that took poverty conditions and gave people opportunities. That was because, one, we demanded it. All of us, we the people, got to the streets and demanded it. And it's because politicians like Zohran Mamdani heard that and said, hey, how can we do better? And that's why, again, this Saturday, October 18th, find a rally. Go to nokings.org, find one. There are like 2,600 of them across the country. You got to find one. Take a neighbor, take a friend, take a red hat. Everybody get into the street and talk about real issues. That to me is the important part of this. This is a great opportunity. This is the beginning of what I hope is the organizing that's going to push us towards the next New Deal push to rebuild our broken American dream. Quick break, right back with Randy Weingarten. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, no thrones, no crowns, no kings. That's the tagline for the No Kings rally on October 18th. Hope everyone finds one near them. And I got to tell you, sounds a little like my childhood, you know, Schoolhouse Rock song somewhere. Oh, wait a minute. There was a Schoolhouse Rock song called No Kings. No More Kings was the title of it. Maybe we should go back and, you know, to those days, of at least in my elementary years, relearn our history. And here to share some thoughts on the big No Kings rally, I've asked our good friend Randy Weingarten to come share some thoughts. Randy is the president of the American Federation of Teachers. She is also the author of the fabulous book and a must-read in this day and age, Why Fascists Fear Teachers. Randy, thanks for taking time for us.
I'm always glad to be with you, Rick, and I'm in an airport now because I'm on my way to the strike of thousands of Kaiser hardworking nurses and therapists and others. So you see me in an airport today. Sorry.
No. Look, everyone's busy. Everyone's moving, and I appreciate you taking time for us because this is a big moment. I think
it is.
This rally is what I've been saying. We've been needing to do. We need to get people out into the streets, meeting each other, get off the sidewalks, yelling at each, past each other, and marching together. This is a big deal. Walk me through what you see.
So, as of today, there are over 2,600 sites. There's probably many more, but this is where the people who are hosting have gone through a security check to make sure that we are doing everything we can to make these demonstrations and protests and marches safe and nonviolent. So we had our dream number was 2,100, and we're at 2,600. There are more people who have signed up this time than had signed up at this time for the June rally. And you know, we have done Indivisible, Move On, ourselves, SEIU is now one of the anchor partners for this October 18th. Every one of these big rallies we have done before has been peaceful and nonviolent. Now, why do I dwell on that before I even say what it's about? Because in the last few days, the party that has walked away from democracy is now smearing those of us who believe in democracy. I mean, I don't know about anybody else, but I have never actually found an Antifa chapter or an Antifa member. I don't even know if they exist. And certainly those of us who are protesting on Saturday, October 18th, we love our country. We believe in our country. We want the promise of America for everyone. But that starts kind of like, and sorry to put the social studies hat on, that starts like it actually started 249 years ago when the people, the men who wrote the Declaration of Independence, the white dudes who wrote the Declaration of Independence, the one thing that they believed in more than anything else was that we would never in America have a king or a monarch or a dictator ruling us again. And here, 249 years later, the people of America are saying, regardless of what else you think, we need a democracy where the people, not a president, rules and governs.
Yeah.
Not
I'm
somebody
for and by
who
we the
abuses
people.
Power. Yeah, exactly right. And what's happening right now is that there is this huge rush by the Trump administration to not just smear their enemies, but indict their enemies, even when they have no evidence, to disappear people, to militarize our streets with the National Guard who does not want to be there. This is not America.
Right.
And so what you have is you got a lot of people, a lot of middle-aged ladies, and a lot of young kids, and a lot of everything in between, who are basically saying, sorry about the fly, are basically saying, no, this is not who we are. This is not what we want. We need to actually have a democracy where the people's voice matter, not an abuse of power by somebody who is the president of the United States.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I started off by referencing the Schoolhouse Rock song, No More Kings, because look, you know, we're going to elect a president, no more kings. We're going to do what the people want, no more kings. We're going to run things our way. No one's going to tell us what to do. And yet, it seems like we're rushing to this. So as the civics person here in the room, when you see this no kings moniker, when you see this push to reaffirm government of, for, and by, we the people.
The people.
What do you want people to know from this? What's the lesson in this for us going forward?
Well, the first lesson is kind of, sorry for anybody who's taken any of my classes, it's kind of like, okay, there's a do now. There's a lesson goal, but there's a do now. The do now is I'm asking everyone to find one of the No Kings rally. Don't go by yourself. Go with a friend. Go with a family member. But go. If you believe in us having a democracy, and if you believe in a voice, if you believe in us actually dealing with housing prices, healthcare prices, making sure that education is such that it works for all the people. If you want a president to actually solve problems, not make things worse, if you want America that looks to its future, not its past, if you want us to fight for the promise of America, whatever you want, whatever your aspirations are about actually having an America that listens to each other, that solves our problems, go to one of these rallies.
No, absolutely.
They will be peaceful. They will be joyful. That's what I want people to do on Saturday. And then after Saturday, what I'm hoping is that the President of the United States of America actually remembers his oath of office to be about solving problems of Americans, not actually trying to settle scores with his political opponents. Solve America's problems. Get grocery prices down. Deal with healthcare issues. Deal with housing. Reopen the government by actually talking to Americans. Do what you're trying to do internationally, nationally, in terms of creating a peace and having an environment where everyone can thrive.
And the big part of this for me as an organizer is this is an opportunity for people to meet others in the streets, find a friend, the networking, the organizing that comes out of this. Because the march is one thing, the rally is one thing, but it's what comes after. It's all of the
Correct.
Building. Because, look, I've been saying, you know, we built the 20th century off the backs of the New Deal. But that wasn't because FDR was benevolent or a wonderful leader. It's because people were in the streets. My grandparents' generation were ripping this country apart brick by brick for dignity and respect. It was the organizing of the 20s. So here we are 100 years later. We got to get back to the
exactly
streets.
Right. We have to, but we have to, even if we disagree with each other on a boatload of issues, America's society, America has always been about our better days are ahead of us, not behind us. And it's about a society that comes together and compromises our issues and settles our differences. And it is, that's what a democracy is. That's what we the people are. A king is one that makes the decisions by himself. There's never a dictator is one that makes the decisions by himself. A democracy is one where it could be messy. It's not efficient all the time, but it is about us having the right to actually have a future based upon the rule of law, based upon being treated fairly, not chaos, not corruption, not cruelty. And so there's a lot of people that are going to be marching for a lot of different things, but you're absolutely right, Rick. The issue of community is absolutely essential here. And Americans are good people, but we have a right to not expect this kind of cruelty, this kind of threat, this kind of chaos, this kind of corruption. We have a right to expect our government works for us. So negotiate with the Democrats. Deal with the yeah. health premiums. Make sure that schools are funded. Don't make colleges take a loyalty oath to get the money they need to cure cancer. And instead of all these tariffs, why are we not lowering prices? Why are we not raising wages? Why are we not increasing manufacturing? These are the things that Americans want.
Most certainly. Now, you have been called by some the most dangerous person in the entire world. I've seen that. You've written this fabulous book, Why Fascists Fear Teachers. So in your book, you argue that the one of the hallmarks of authoritarianism is attacking teachers. How does this No Kings rally build on the message of defending democratic education, defending teachers, defending public education? How do you hope this builds on that?
Well, I mean, think about it. It builds on it in two different ways. First, what a society does together, and teachers do it in their classrooms and on their campuses, is that regardless of diverse viewpoints, regardless of differences, We bring people together in classrooms to share the values of freedom and to share the values of learning. That's pluralism at its best, and that is what the founders of our Constitution did, including having a process to actually change the Constitution to make it fairer, and which is what happened with the Civil Rights Movement. That's number one. So fascists or authoritarians want people to be alone. They want people to be scared. They want people to say, oh, nothing's ever going to change. But the second thing that we do is we create knowledge, and we help people and kids in particular figure out different experiences and what it means to them and how do they discern fact from fiction. And so what this rally is, it is real time ways of actually fighting for freedom for this generation. And that is what we in this generation are doing, fighting for our rights, fighting for our freedom to speak, our freedom to assemble, our freedom, which is the pillar of our Constitution. So that's what it's about. It's going to be a learning experience. Peaceful, joyful, lots of fun signs, people coming together to say, no, no kings, no crowns. Let us actually redeem, fight for the promise of America for everyone.
Because as you know, we started off with this whole idea of no kings, this idea of for and by we the people, I think it needs to be hammered home. Sadly, I thought it was in our DNA. I thought it was something that we all grew up believing, red hat, blue hat, no hat. But again, something that we need to...
I think it is in our DNA, Rick. I think that's one of the reasons. I think that's one of the reasons that you hear this demonization of the protesters, this falsification of who all of us are, this making us, I mean, it's completely false what Johnson and others are saying about us. It's, but we are peaceful people who are protesting for freedom for all of us.
So, you know, I'm looking at this and the responses that I've seen from Republicans, and I kind of want to get your thoughts on this, because you alluded to Johnson saying that this is the Hate America rally. You've got the Treasury Secretary saying that, you know, these are just happening to continue the shutdown. So no kings equals no paychecks. You got Roger Marshall, who seems to be hoping there's violence so that they can call in the National Guard. It seems like there's an alternative reality to what's actually going on in this situation.
I wear this American flag every day. Every day. I am an American. I am a proud American. This is about loving America and fighting for our future. And ultimately, that's how you know that these people who took an oath of office to try and follow the Constitution, that's why you know they're scared, because instead of solving problems, they are demonizing others. We need to solve problems in America.
So last line
instead of demonizing others, solve them.
Last line of questioning.
Don't smear us.
Last line of questioning I've got for you, because I get a lot of questions from people going, hey, what's labor doing to stop this administration? What are unions doing to defend democracy? This is part of it, right?
Right, of course. Well, two major unions in the country, SEIU and AFT, are anchoring the No Kings rallies throughout the country. And because what happens is you need a voice at work to make things better. You need a voice in democracy to make things better. And it's not a strong man. It's not a boss that basically says, I'm going to fire you. You know, you're going to get this. The other person is going to get that. You need somebody who's going to make things fair as a boss. You need somebody who's going to make things fair as a president. So what labor is doing in the workplace, we are doing right now on the streets to make things fair. That's what we're asking for, to have a government that listens to the people, solves the people's problems, like healthcare is too darn costly, housing is too darn costly, groceries are too darn costly. Solve those problems. Yeah. don't make it worse.
No, absolutely. But the question that I keep getting is why is it just SEIU and AFT? Why isn't it the entire movement? And how do we get the entire movement on board on a lot of these issues? You know, whether it's the immigration stuff, whether it's the shutdown, whether it's, you know, our dear leader, our unitary executive.
Well, let me say this. I'm a school teacher. I prefer to look at things as the glass half as a half full, not half empty. So you have two of the major unions in the country. And we have to create a tent that is so big that people see themselves in it. And I think that this weekend you're going to see a lot of union members on the streets because they understand what's important.
Outstanding. Randy, good on you. I look forward to hearing from you again when this is over and how we move this forward. But be safe and stay strong. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our good friend Randy Weingarten. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Showing up on October 18th. Again, nokings.org. That's where you go to find where the nearest rally near you is. Highly suggested. Bring a friend, maybe two. Quick break. Right back.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. For tonight, a mostly cloudy sky, a few showers and storms around, and a low close to 60. A mixture of sunshine and clouds for tomorrow, maybe a stray shower, a high near 70. Storm chances continue tomorrow night, wrapping up in the first half of Sunday. Currently, it's 66.
Hey there, Wisconsin. Tom Hartman here. Democracy is not a spectator sport, so join me each and every weekday right here on Civic Media for the Tom Hartman program from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Covering the news of the day and sharing ways for you to get off the sidelines and get active in your community, because change starts with you. Get involved and tune in to the Tom Hartman program Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on your local Civic Media radio station.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Thursday, you had Congressman James Walkinshaw, a number of Virginia lawmakers and disability rights advocates from the United Spinal Association, all rallying at National Airport alongside contract workers from Dulles and National. The group calling for livable wages, better benefits. You know what unions call for, better wages, hours, conditions, as they negotiate what I guess is the first ever economic contract between the contractors and the airlines. And that's why I've asked the executive vice president of 32BJ SEIU to come share some thoughts as these frontline heroes, you know, workers we used to call frontline heroes, the people who are help the disabled with their wheelchairs, the people who clean the airplanes, the baggage handlers, you know, all those essential folks. That's who they represent. And that's why I've asked Jamie Contreras to come share some thoughts on what Thursday's rally was all about and maybe what's going to come out of it. Jamie, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So walk me through what happened on Thursday.
Well, you know, so these workers are workers who, again, they're baggage handlers. They clean the terminals. They fuel the planes. They clean the cabins. They, you know, help the disabled and the elderly to their gates. Workers who, during the pandemic, showed up to work where many of us were working from home, risking their lives and that of their families and their communities, and some of them losing their lives. And all this time, these workers work without health care, which is a basic need one. And if that wasn't bad enough, these workers are making, $16.78 an hour, which is the MWA minimum wage for DCA and Dallas. And, you know, again, these are people who already work two jobs, and most of them live paycheck to paycheck and rely on things like Medicare and Medicaid, which are programs that we all know could go away anytime.
And the thing is this is all despite the fact that you have record revenues at these airlines, passenger traffic is up, and still the wages, the benefits, the conditions for these workers, subpar at best. I'll go with that.
I mean, yes. I mean, you know, airlines, remember, during the pandemic, these airlines, they got something like $52 billion in bailout from the federal government. And I can guarantee you little to none of it made it to the pockets of these workers who, again, were showing up to work, getting sick and getting their family sick during the pandemic. You know, if it wasn't for their the fight that we've had with EMWA over the last couple of years, they would still probably be making $6.45, $7 an hour, which is what they were making several years ago when we first organized them. So times have changed. Things have gotten a lot more expensive, and workers shouldn't have to choose between paying rent or feeding their families, which is what these workers are facing.
Especially since there is money there. Look, I mean, you know, the airlines are making money. They're doing well. Because every time things go the other way, they're always asking for concessions. So it seems now that times are doing well, they should open the pockets a little bit. But are these the airlines themselves, or are these contractors that are hired by the airlines? Walk me through what this looks like.
Yeah, so what's happening is, you know, we're entering what we call economic bargaining for these workers. And these are with airline contractors. So the workers do not work directly for the airlines. They do work for contractors. But guess who hires the contractors? It's the airlines. And they're the ones that at the end of the day have to make sure these contractors can fund benefits, can fund wages for these workers. So we're entering bargaining for this 4,000 or so workers at DCA in Dallas. And what they're asking for is not going to break the bank. Just give people a decent wage increase, you know, facing health care for these workers that are so deserving of it. You know, people shouldn't have to work two and sometimes even three jobs at these airports to be able to feed their families. But, you know, that's the reality for these workers. And again, these are mostly black and brown immigrant workers, people of color who have been left behind forever at these airports. And that's why 32BJ has been organizing these workers for a while. And now that they're organized, they're at the bargaining table, and we want these employers to do right by them.
Yeah, I was reading something a couple minutes ago that said that there was a survey done of these airport workers that they reported 90% of them are getting some kind of Medicaid or Medicare or lack any health coverage at all, especially if the ACA subsidies are ended. Is that accurate, 90%?
Of the people that we surveyed, 90% of them, you know, lack these benefits or rely on Medicare and Medicaid, which we all know are at risk of going away under this administration. And you know, 40 or so percent of them, you know, report that they have to choose between paying the bills and feeding their families. And that's just not, you know, that's just not what we should be doing. We find billions and billions of dollars to fight wars. We should be able to find some money to pay the people who, you know, frankly, make the airports run every day, make sure passengers are safe and make it to their gate, make it to their destination safe. The least that we can do is pay them a decent salary and give them some benefits.
No, absolutely. But, you know, here's the question then, because you've got the Trump administration who's going after gutting Medicaid. Right now, Republicans are trying to do away with the subsidies for the ACA, which is going to make health care much more expensive, especially for low-wage workers. Is this the employers that we should be demanding? Is it the government we should be demanding to make the subsidies? Is it both? Where are you in this world?
I mean, look, at the end of the day, workers who work a full-time job shouldn't have to rely on public, you know, benefits. They should be able to have employer-paid health care. That's what most of our full-time members in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, whether they're security officers or commercial office cleaners or, you know, federal workers, federal contractor workers, they all have employer-paid health care. These airline contractors, these airlines who are making billions and billions of dollars in record profits should be able to spend, you know, a couple of millions, not even in billions, but a couple of millions and investing that money in the well-being of these workers who, again, deserve it for, you know, doing the work that they do every day.
Yeah, in the grand scheme of things, we're talking pennies on the dollar, really, right?
Absolutely. I mean, look, every time we talk about health care or sick days or vacation or giving people a wage increase, you know, all these employers say, oh, no, the sky is going to fall. Guess what? You know, people in commercial office buildings in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, people who work in security have been able to raise their standards. Not only the wages are much, much higher than the people who work at the airport, but they all have employer pay health care. Why can't these airports, again, who are economic engines in the region, do right by the workers who make these airports function every day?
Now, these are people who show up, they do their job 40 hours a week, they're punching the clock, and yet there's still stories of people who are homeless. There's still people who can't afford to put food on the table, a roof over their head. The rates of people needing food stamps and health assistance and rent assistance and all of this for people who, again, are working 40 hours a week. They're going, they're doing what society said you've got to do, and yet it's not near enough. Are there stories in your world that fit those molds?
Absolutely. I mean, we have stories of workers at the airports working two and sometimes even three jobs, sleeping at the airport because they can't, you know, they can't make it home from one job to the next to go get a couple of nice rest. You know, the reality is that any worker who works a full-time job in America should be able to sustain a family, have, you know, healthcare benefits, have paid leave. But that's just not the case. And the reality is these contractors, this airline, these airports are not going to give us anything unless we fight for it. And that's exactly what we were doing yesterday.
No, and look, I was saying this rally that you had on Thursday, kind of the precursor to what's coming up over the weekend with the No Kings rally and the push towards not just saying, look, that we have no kings in this country, but demanding an economy that works for everyone, demanding a living wage for people who do the right things, who show up, who work hard, play by the rules. And sadly, for most of my lifetime anyway, I've been getting the short end of the stick and getting screwed. So this was kind of, for me, the beginning of what I hope is coming a lot more over the next year or two.
Yeah, absolutely. The reality is that this administration is putting billionaires over working class people. They're doing the exact opposite of what they said they were going to do when they were running for office, whether it's, you know, harassing our immigrant communities, harassing people of color, doing away with healthcare subsidies to, frankly, satisfy their billionaire friends. They want to become a monarchy or, a dictatorship. And that's just not who we are in America. That's why this Saturday, you have something like 2,600 rallies around the country where millions of people are going to come out in blue states and red states and say enough is enough.
And for me, again, it comes back down to, you know, and this is where this is nonpartisan in my view. If you work hard and play by the rules, you should get ahead. You know, my entire lifetime, that's what we were told. You go, you do what you're supposed to do, you could be able to put a roof over your head, and you could get ahead. And sadly, because we've created the largest billionaire class in the history of humanity off the backs of your members and these workers who are fighting for dignity, there seems to be no shame. And this is where my frustration is and why I'm hoping to see more of what you're doing and why I think what you did on Thursday was so important.
Yeah, I mean, look, whether you're in a blue state or a red state, whether you voted for Trump or the Republicans or you voted for the Democrats, you're going to be hurting. If these healthcare subsidies go away, your families are going to be hurting. 22 million people are going to lose healthcare. And that's, you know, again, the reason all these rallies are happening around the country is because people are fed up. You know, you got Republicans just like Democrats saying, you know what, this is not what we wanted out of this guy, out of this administration. And this is why we're coming out in the millions on Saturday. And this is, frankly, why we're protesting. We were protesting on Thursday because, you know, you have a record profit, you know, in the airline industry, at these airports, you know, the companies that these workers work for, they're making millions. And, you know, it's not fair that workers have to make $16.78 an hour with no benefits. And $16.78 is merely close to half of what a single person with no kids should be making just to be able to make ends meet in the D.C. area, and that's what we're trying to change.
No, because, look, you say 1678. I know in a lot of the areas where we have audience, they're going, that's not bad. I might be able to make it. It's the more that I make. I hear stuff like this all the time. But you're talking about a major metropolitan city. I'm sorry, nearly $17 an hour when rents are $2,500 a month, just not going to cut it. And this, again, is part of a failure of what's going on in D.C., what's a failure of going on in state houses across this country, and why I still come back to, if we're going to move this country in the right direction, we've got to reunionize and divvy up the pot a little bit better than we've been doing.
Absolutely, 100%. The reality is that the gap between the working class and the billionaire class has grown even farther than it has in previous years. And, you know, frankly, working people, again, whether you're Republican or a Democrat, you just want to be able to have a chance to give your family, yourself, a shot at the American dream. And the way it is right now, the only people who are getting that shot is the billionaire class that Trump and his people are helping, which is not what they said they'll do. They said they'll be looking out for the working men and women. They're doing the complete opposite. Don't be fooled.
So last line of questioning I've got for you, because, you know, clearly this is a pressure campaign. These companies aren't going to voluntarily, out of the goodness of the benevolence of their heart, give your members what they need. What can we do to help? What can I do to help? What can passengers do? What can communities do to help you?
Well, first of all, I think exposing what's happening at these airports, like we're doing at this in this interview, is important. I think passengers, you know, the least that you can do when you're going through DCA or Dallas or frankly any airport in the country, just say thank you to the person pulling that wheelchair or the person carrying those bags or the person cleaning your airplane or cleaning the terminal or the security officers. Look, you got TSA workers, you got air traffic controllers and all these workers who do work for the federal government working for free now because of the federal shutdown. Talk about real patriots. Those are the real patriots, people who show up every day to do these jobs, you know, in many ways, thankless jobs by this administration, because I just don't see how any of these people, I'm talking about the administration, can sleep any day while working class people who work at these airports, and even military people are, you know, instead of focusing on their jobs, they're focusing on how they're going to make ends meet and pay the bills for their family.
No, and I'm glad you highlighted that, because, you know, what's happened, I think, too much in this country is we've divided the workforce. Oh, those are federal workers. That's their problem. I'm in the private sector. And the two never shall come together, when the reality is this administration, whether they're federal workers or private sector workers or the public sector, they are attacking workers. And that, you know, we used to believe an injury one to being an injury to all. It seems like an injury to a million we don't seem to care much about.
Yeah, no, I think we need to wake up. I mean, the reality is we need to wake up as a people, as a democracy. Otherwise, it's going to be taken away. This administration and their cronies are not fooling around. They did tell us when they were running for office what they would do, and they're doing it. And so this is why people are waking up and coming out to the streets and saying enough is enough.
Jamie Contreras, I appreciate you taking time for us. Keep up the fight, and I hope to talk to you again real soon.
I'm at your disposal whenever you need me. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks so much, Jamie. I appreciate it. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Are you ready for the No Kings rally? You ready for the weekend for to get out and get into the streets, rallying like Jamie and his members? I want to hear it. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1987. That was the day that more than 100,000 people gathered in Paris to stand up against poverty and hunger. The gathering was inspired by Father Joseph Racinski, a French Catholic priest. He founded the All Together in Dignity Fourth World Movement, dedicated to addressing poverty. That day unveiled a commemorative stone to honor the victims of extreme poverty. extreme poverty. The stone bears an image of two people, arms outstretched, releasing a bird into the sky. The stone's inscription read, "On this day, defenders of human and civil rights from every continent gathered here. They paid homage to the victims of hunger, ignorance, and violence. They affirmed their conviction that human misery is not inevitable. They pledged their solidarity with all people who, throughout the world, strive to end extreme poverty." The site they chose to place the stone was significant. The Trocadero Plaza in Paris is where the Universal Declaration of Human Rights was proclaimed by the United Nations in 1948. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights affirmed the basic rights of all people, including the right to form and to join trade unions, and the right to equal pay for equal work. Placing the commemorative stone at this important spot was a continuation of this legacy. In the years since then, on this very day, other cities around the world have commemorated replicas of the stone. Nearly 20 cities in France have dedicated stones. Cities in Canada, Mexico, Switzerland, Belgium, Ireland, Scotland, Great Britain, Italy, Poland, Portugal, and the Philippines have all placed these tributes. In 1992, the United Nations declared today, October 17th, the annual International Day for the Eradication of Poverty.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I listen to stories like that Jamie told. And look, these workers, they show up every day. They bust their behinds, begging for tips, busting their butts, and basically poverty wages is what we're talking about. With no health and retirement security, none of the things that the American dream was built on, what my grandparents' generation fought for. Because the sad reality is we're living through a second gilded age, and somehow, weirdly, our anger is placed on those who are, one, least responsible, but two, least able to do anything about it. It really is an incredible scenario. So when these workers are saying, hey, we demand a bit of the profit that's out there, because, hey, these corporations are getting fat and happy, it should trickle down, right? This is what we're told. Trickle down, remember? No. Which is why the top 1% in this country now earn over 20% of all of the nation's income. I shouldn't say earn. They take. Which is why we've got the kind of wealth concentration we've got in this country. And why wages for workers like these workers at the airports, why they've been stagnant and have not grown. You know, back when we had strong union density, you know, 1965 was the peak, about 35% union density. When I entered the workforce in the 80s, still 25% union density. Now we're under 6% in the private sector, under 10% across the economy, which is why wages have been stagnant. As Republicans have successfully destroyed the ability of unions to really fight for those wages, hours, and conditions that make lives better, this is what we get. And even as those union density numbers fall, union workers still get higher wages. They're covered by health insurance more often. They have retirement security more often. But again, you've got a Republican Party hostile, especially to union workers, because they know what it means. It means it's going to raise everybody's standard of living. Remember that American dream thing we used to believe in? And the thing is even despite record corporate profits and just mind-blowingly out of this world executive compensation, the frontline workers, the frontline heroes, those essential folks, they're struggling just to make it to tomorrow. And I've said a million times, workers don't want to make a killing. They just want to make a living, as opposed to the executives who literally want to make a killing. And you wonder why the alligator jaws are so wide in this inequality picture, why the haves have so much and, well, everybody else, not so much. And look, if you're a woman or a person of color, it's even worse. Income gaps are bigger. Paid discrimination is wider. hiring is more difficult. There are real problems with our economy. And look, Trump's not addressing any of that. In fact, making it worse. Talking about how he's going to go after Democrat jobs. Not even sure what that means. Unless somehow he's going to get into the voting records and go, you didn't vote for me. Because ultimately, that's where they want to go. We have had 40 years, 50 years of economic policy in this country that has benefited the wealthy. We've had tax cuts for the very wealthy. We've had tax cuts for corporations. And what's happened for working people? Well, we're told, sorry, nothing for you. Education's going to cost you more. Healthcare is going to cost you more. Housing's going to cost you more. Food's going to cost you more. Go down the list. Everything costs working people more. You know, you see all over social media, you know, the working poor, they work for money, and that money pays debts. Rich people, they let their assets work for them. Yeah, because they've got them. And where'd they get them? In a lot of cases, snatched them away from working people. So when you see job growth and wage increases for low and middle income people who are way behind, you go, well, yeah, that's how we get the largest billionaire class in the history of humanity. And why in this moment you've got Democrats willing to say, no, we're not going to give up our leverage to protect working people by letting you destroy Medicaid. Because I've had a couple of people go, well, is this all over Medicaid? Yes, dimwits. It's over Medicaid. It's over the subsidies for the ACA. It's over working people not again taking it on the chin. And this is where I'm hoping this weekend's rally, I'm hoping this is one of the main themes that people walk away with. That one party is out to screw you. The other party is there to at least try and help, or they're able to be pushed in the way of helping. And the sad reality is, you know, wealth in this country is skyrocketing. There should be opportunity for everyone to be upwardly mobile for a secure middle-class lifestyle. But the sad reality is it's, well, it's slipping away. And a lot quicker than most of us realize. As AI and automation and robotics and all this stuff comes online, the jobs that we do, the income that we earn, the wages that support our lifestyle is going to go away. And then we're going to have to go with our hat in our hand, asking for some kind of benevolence. And this is where working people had better wake up to the reality that there's no such thing as a benevolent dictator. No matter how much you like the orange guy with the red hat, not a benevolent person at all. It's all about one guy in this scenario, and that's our dear leader, our unitary executive, Donald Genius Trump. And if you think there'll be any scraps left over for us to fight over, look around. Is it happening now? So as these workers took to the streets on Thursday, saying, we demand better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities, maybe it's the way forward for all of us. And again, I come back to on Saturday, there are going to be millions of people in the streets saying no kings. Holding that belief in this country that this is of, for, and by we the people. This wonderful experiment in self-governance is what we demand. Not a monarch, not a dictator, not an authoritarian, not a unitary executive, not a dear leader. None of that. But a government that's responsive to working people's needs, responsive to citizens' needs. That's you and me. That's us. So this weekend, find your rally. Go to nokings.org. Look for a rally near you. There are like 2,600 of them. There's got to be one within walking distance of wherever you are. I say find one and drag somebody with you if you have to, or let someone drag you along. And then let me know how it goes. Send me pictures, send me whatever. I want to hear about it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any of today's program, make sure you grab the podcast, or if you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
We're a civic media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. President Trump has met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky at the White House one day after the president had a phone call with Russian President Vladimir Putin. CBS's Nancy Cordes with more.
Long-range Tomahawk missiles were topic number one at President Trump's meeting with Volodymyr Zelensky.
Tomahawks are a big deal.
The Ukrainian president offered a trade of sorts. Ukrainian-made drones in exchange for the U.S.-made Tomahawks, which are capable of striking up to 1,500 miles into Russian territory. Trump seemed open to it at first.
They make a very good drone.
But then he argued Ukraine might not even need new weapons if he can broker a swift end to the invasion.
Trump and Putin have agreed to meet in Budapest in the coming weeks. President Trump posts online that he has commuted the sentence of former Congressman George Santos. More from CBS's Peter.